Welcome to show 22 of the Mises UK podcast with me, your host, Andy Duncan. This morning, I'll be speaking with the Reverend Rory McClure. He's a Free Church pastor for an independent evangelical church on the south coast in England, which is in Sussex, in the beautiful little town of Littlehampton. We'll be talking about the subject of inequality in society and also how inequality measures up within Christianity. Good morning, the Reverend McClure.
Good morning.
Now, first things first, can I call you Rory?
Please do. Yeah.
Excellent. Now, before we get going, could you tell us a little bit about yourself, your church and so on, and how come you ended up writing articles for Mises UK?
Well, I am a Free Church pastor, as I say. I've been at the church for 5 years. And I don't come from a Christian background, although my parents are from Northern Ireland and they come from both sides of the community over there. And then I stumbled across the Bible. I started reading it and it sort of was disturbing and challenging and strange and everything else. And I just found it utterly intriguing. And the more that I read of it, the more that it helped me to rethink things. And it actually helped me to think independently, because it says something that our culture isn't saying. So it gave me a view from outside of our culture as a way of looking into our culture. And the more I found out about it, the more that I got intrigued and then desired to go into the ministry, felt a strong call there, looked around at the Bible colleges in England, rolled my eyes and thought, well, let's see what else there is. And so I ended up over in the States for 4 years and had a fantastic education over there, and just came back excited about the things I'd learned there and wanted to try and hand those things on to the churches in England. And the great thing about America is that there's still a minority out there, a very lively minority of people out there that believe in what America was founded on, which was life, liberty, and property.
Fantastic. And so how did you get to be writing articles? So I understand the working in churches and so on and spreading the word of God, but how did you then end up writing for Mises UK?
Well, as I say, as I've read the Bible starts off with a purpose for humanity. Humanity is made in God's image, and humanity is given responsibility. Every human being, not humanity in general, but every human being is made in the image of God and given the responsibility to steward God's creation. And then we're given an example of how that should happen. And so you have Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, a bit of private property, and it's got an irrigation system in it, and it's got trees in it, which are fruitful, and there's crops and things like that. And so here's an example of how to steward God's good creation. And so man and woman are created here to reproduce the Garden of Eden across the world. And so you've got the basis right from the beginning of the Bible of private property, personal responsibility, families, to develop the good things in God's good creation.
I must reread the Bible because that's all music to my ears. Now, in a recent article on Mises UK, I mean, you've got a bit of private property and John Locke and homesteadism there in the Garden of Eden, which is magnificent. On the Mises UK blog, you wrote a fantastic article called Defending Inequality. And you defended inequality as something absolutely necessary for life, as opposed to what you said, the equality of death, where we all have equality. For our listeners, then, can you describe your beliefs in inequality?
Well, I find it fascinating that even evangelicals in this country seem to be more influenced by the egalitarian spirit of our age than they are by what Jesus himself says. One of his most famous parables was the parable of the talents. And Jesus says that he gave to one 5 talents, to the other 2, to the other 1, each according to his ability. And then he went away. And so you've got this is an image of God giving talents to human beings. This is an image of God delegating responsibility to those that are made in his image, and him eventually calling us to account depending on how we've used those talents. And he doesn't give those gifts equally. And the odd thing is, not surprising from my viewpoint, is that that's exactly what we see among humanity. Some people are fantastically talented at sports. Others are fantastically talented at creating music or art. And others are fantastically talented at starting up new businesses or being entrepreneurs. And then you've got the majority in the middle that are happy to benefit from that. And then you have the tragic minority at the other end that desperately need our help.
Yeah, and in Christianity, though, we do see many examples of a demand for equality. We see people thinking that if we're all created in the image of God, then we should all be identical to God. And we're seeing a bit at the moment. God is sexless and we should all be one thing as well. Now, we see people like... Like Pope Francis, I better be careful here because Keir Martland might get upset. But I'll just be very gentle. Now he's a serious Christian, if anything else, and he's been quoted as saying that inequality is the root of all social ills. So how does he have Christianity and equality locked up, and how can you have inequality and Christianity locked up?
I'm not a Catholic, but I do respect some of the Catholic social teaching. And if you looked in the 19th century, the popes in the 19th century were writing encyclicals that were very anti-socialism. They were warning against the dangers of socialism. They were defending the rights of private property. And that's very much part of the Christian heritage. After all, one of the Ten Commandments is, you shall not steal. And if you shall not steal, then that's a guarantee before God of the right to own property. So it's very much part and parcel of the whole Christian ethos, that individual responsibility for taking the things that God has entrusted to us. Unfortunately, just as I said earlier, it's happened to the Evangelical Church, it's happened to the Church of England, it's happened to the churches across the whole of Europe. The insanity of the church has been that if we can only embrace the qualities and the ethics and the ideals of our secular culture will come flooding into the church, rather than standing prophetically outside of our culture saying, actually, you're going wrong. This is going to cause tremendous suffering, tremendous division, tremendous inequality, tremendous upsetting one people against another group of people. And sadly, people have lost that prophetic vision, that ability to stand outside the culture and say, this is insane. And sadly, I think that the present Pope has embraced those qualities, not from the Catholic tradition, not certainly not from the Bible, but from a desire to be liked by a secular culture.
Now, I'm a bit less religiously educated than perhaps I should be, but shouldn't the church or religion or Christianity, shouldn't society be a reflection of the beliefs of Christianity rather than Christianity reflecting what society is currently up to?
There's good things in society. There's good, noble things that people desire to do. They desire to be kind to and minister to the disabled. They desire to help the homeless. There's lots of good qualities. However, if you do those things in a way that's actually going to end up causing long-term damage to them, then it's very much part of the church's responsibility to say, stop, don't do it that way. There's a better way of doing it. And so if that's true for those things that we can all agree on, it's important that somebody in society step back and look at the problems and the social ills and say, look, these are problems. And that sometimes means being unpopular. But hey, you know, us Christians are used to being unpopular. We've been unpopular for the last 2,000 years. We look at the Old Testament and people, the prophets in the Old Testament were unpopular because they talked about uncomfortable things. And yet those uncomfortable things ultimately turned out to bring the prosperity and the measures of peace and the measures of governmental stability and everything else that we enjoy in the world today. So I don't have a problem with being unpopular. What I have a problem with is just saying what our culture already believes and thinking that that's going to keep working, because it ain't.
Yeah, I mean, I see Christianity as the basis of European civilization. It's what took us away from many other parts of the world who had this strong state structure where they had the emperor or the king was linked to God or was the son of God and like a pharaoh and everything hierarchical. But Christianity broke that up and said it's society is based on the individual and goes up from there. So that's a great thing. Getting on to your article, you started it with something which I found, which I thought was fantastic. Sorry, I've got to stop using that word. That the last time we had an equal society, it was in the Stone Age, and we all had equal poverty. Now, socialism and Marx and all of his ideas, they have the idea of trying to enforce equality at the point of a gun. Now, do you think if they could force world socialism onto us with absolutely no escape, with a world socialist government, without needing walls and fences like they did with the Warsaw Pact and the Iron Curtain, do you think we'd, with this equal society, do you think we'd go straight back to the Stone Age in kind of short order?
just look at history. I mean, it's we've got we don't have to guess anymore. That's the great thing about history. One of the wonderful things about the mid-19th century is in their blissful naivety, they could look forward into the future and just fantasize about this wonderful paradise that might be able to be achieved. We can't do that anymore. We don't have that luxury. All we can do is look back at the last 150 years and just look in utter disgust and revulsion. And if it hasn't worked so far, it ain't going to work again in the future. Look at Venezuela today. There is an incredibly prosperous country that, with an abundance of natural resources, not just oil, but wonderful other resources as well. And yet, this quest for equality has brought it to bankruptcy and starvation. It's insane.
Yeah, it is insane. But one thing I find very strange about them is that they want to force equality onto the rest of us. But the socialist intellectuals I meet see themselves as not being the same as us or equal to us, but better. They see themselves as benevolent angels guiding us out of individualist damnation. How do you think they square this in their own minds, that they're better than us and they can direct us, but that we're all equal at the same time? How do you think they square that in their own heads?
Let me recommend a great book to your listeners by Thomas Sowell. Thomas Sowell has this wonderful book. He's a secular writer, an American, who wrote about the conflict of visions. And he looks at the history of philosophy in Western Europe and the way that that's impacted today. And he talks about the tragic vision, which would be summarized by Locke and by Edmund Burke and people like that, which says that we don't know why these institutions work, but they do. They've produced prosperity and liberty. We can't fully justify it. We don't really understand how the market works, but it seems to produce prosperity. And then you've got the what Thomas Sowell calls the vision of the anointed. And these are the very clever intellectuals that think that if only everybody could do it my way, we could solve all of the problems. And so one is driven entirely by ideology, mm-hmm. entirely by we understand what the problems are, we've got a complete understanding of how to solve them, and if only people would trust us. The trouble is that you've got all the stupid people out there that don't really understand, but we're clever, and they're not. And so they're a bit like children, really. Oh, bless them. Well, let's not worry their little heads about how to do this. What we need to do is just get into power, and then we'll be able to solve it out for them. Personally, I call that the messianic impulse. Now, I've already got a perfectly good messiah. I trust him. I don't trust these pseudo-messiahs that have made such a mess and are continuing to make a mess of our world.
Now, apart from this story of the talents, does Jesus or the Old Testament Bible have anything else to say about inequality?
It's interestingly, if you look, I wrote another article, playful article, talking about inequality in the law. But the reality is the Old Testament is actually the source of equality before the law. In the law of Moses, it says numerous times that you shall not prefer the poor in court. You shall not give preference to the rich in court. There is supposed to be, every human being is supposed to be morally accountable to the standards of the law. And so you have that type of equality, which is equality of responsibility. But the outworking of that is that you just allow people to work according to their gifting and their calling.
Yeah, now I found that quite a hard case, actually, your article there, the moral case against equality, because, again, Keir Martland will correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Hayek and various other Austrian economists and philosophers have been very strong on the equality of law. Can you explain why you said in that article that you thought there should also be an inequality in law?
Partly it's a common sense, which is that somebody who's criminally insane, a child, somebody under the age of 16, for example, are punished less than a fully grown adult. And we all accept that. We know that it would be immoral to punish a child to the same level as an adult. Somebody who's got a severe mental illness has to be treated differently. So we all accept that. But I just find it very ironic, and I'm perfectly happy to defend it, that women are punished less for committing the same crimes as men. And there's no explanation for that other than women are different from men. And so my playful comment at the end was, well, if women should be punished less for exactly the same crime as a man, how is it that a woman has the right to be paid exactly the same as a man for her labor? So it's really a provocative question.
Okay. Now, we are seeing this push from the left at the moment. They've tried everything else and it's failed. So now they're trying this, trying to get rid of men and women and try to make us all things, which I find terrible. But the word inequality, it's a hard word to defend. If you stood on a soapbox at Speaker's Corner and said, I'm here to defend inequality, it sounds a bit negative. Maybe do you think we should play the left at their own game and take, like they've taken lots of our words, like liberal and so on. Could we take some of their words and instead defend diversity and use our own word, individuality, rather than standing on a soapbox and defending inequality?
Of course. I mean, we've got to do all sorts of different ways to try and expose their nonsense. The article I wrote about defending inequality is actually a celebration of diversity. And the left is constantly trying to celebrate diversity until it doesn't get them what they want. And then they have to harp on about dividing us and putting one group against the other and building up resentment so that they can get power. And they do that by insisting on equality. We live in God's reality. We can't change God's reality. But what we can do is accept God's reality and produce the good potential out of that rather than trying to inflict something on top of it.
Yeah, I like that. We use diversity. It is strange, isn't it? How they talk about equality and diversity in the same sentence and can't see the problems with using two entirely different concepts for their ideology. Anyhow, Reverend Rory McClure, it's been great speaking to you this morning. Before we go, is there any kind of website where people can find out more about you, or do you have anything that you'd like to promote at all?
Not at the moment. Maybe if somebody wants to contact our church, and I'm sure that'll be easy to find, they can ask about a overview of the whole Bible that I've written, which is called Read His Story. And it starts off with, I talked about at the beginning, I'm trying to get people to read their Bibles chronologically, cover to cover, and find out how it is that one principle right at the beginning of the Bible, that God created man in his own image with the responsibility to develop his good creation, that covenant promise is built on and built on all the way through the Bible. And I fully believe, unlike some of my fellow believers that believe that we're in the end times and there's great disasters ahead, I think that that's nonsense. I think that there's good things ahead of us if we do it God's way. And I just love more and more Christians to be able to read that and understand that and be excited about the potential that we have in the scriptures. And it's based on freedom, property, responsibility, personal responsibility, and then serving in our local communities, in our local churches, to have compassion on those that are unable to help themselves.
You're a man after my own heart. Now, what would they put into Google then to find your church?
So, Parkside Evangelical Church, and they could leave a message on the website, and they could ask for a copy of those booklets, and I'm sure we could send something out to anybody who's interested.
Brilliant. And that's in Littlehampton in Sussex in England.
Yeah.
So, thank you very much for your time today, Rory.
No problem.
I hope we get to speak again soon.
I look forward to that. Thank you, Andy.
We hope you enjoyed this morning's programme with the Reverend Rory McClure. If you'd like to help us out on the MisesUK.org podcast, please add the links to this programme onto your favourite social media sites. And if you can, please write us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. For every review that's written, and given our special guest today, there really will be 100 angels greeting you at heaven's pearly gates if you help us to spread our message. We'll be back very soon with some other great guests from the world of Austrian economics and other interesting areas. In the meantime, please enjoy your property and freedom responsibly.